Okay, good evening, Board of Maladasa, and all those present. Baruch Hashem, we're here at the second week of the Shoulder Lectures. Tonight's guest speaker is Rav Tzvi Rogan, who is good enough to agree to my request to come and share his vast knowledge with us. Rav Rogan is an Abedin, a Lashiva, Moel Shochet, certified CPA.
Okay.
And a sofistam, and has had a hand in all the fields, not just didactic and not just halacha knowledge, but Islamish, Nogea, halacha lemaisa, and we'll share some of this knowledge tonight. I personally think tonight's lecture is extremely pertinent. Islamish, this is the day-to-day life of buying things, knowing what to buy, what to accept, not to accept, deliveries, etc. I won't go into more because I'm not stealing the show, and I have to say personally I'm very happy because I'm not speaking tonight. Anyway, without further ado, I'd like to introduce Rav Tzvi Rogan, and I assume along the way, Rav will decide with questions or whatnot, however he wants to go over the show. I did forget one thing which is important. I was asked to announce also there are still Kashrus guides available, hard copies, a few that are around. They're 10 shekels each. Anyone would like one, put the money, take the book, and benefit from the knowledge.
First, I would like to say that I'm very glad to be with my Master Shemesh tonight.
I can't hear him at all.
I'm very glad to be in Ramat Beit Shemesh tonight.
I don't think it's on.
I'll take care of it. How's that? Okay, I'm very glad to be in Ramat Beit Shemesh tonight. It's not quite Yerushalayim, but it's close. It's full of Jews who want to obey Hashem, which is the most important thing to do. I will follow the guidance of my Rebbe, Rav Moshe Beishen, Zech Libracha, who said that no matter what you're going to say, you should always start with a pasuk, start with an open sefer, and then you go on from there. Amos and Navi said, Vayan Amos Vayomer El Hamatzia Lo Navi Anochi Velo Ven Navi Anochi Ki Voker Anochi Ovalama Shikmin Voleth Shikmin. Amos said, I'm not a Navi and I'm not the son of a Navi. Rashi explains that what Amos is saying to the Nevi'ei Sheker, I don't do this for a living. Baruch Shem, not Baruch Shem that I'm leaving Eretz Yisrael next week, but Baruch Shem, I'm doing Hamotzi Lechem Min HaChutz La'aretz, and I don't get my parnasa from any kind of rabbonus whatsoever, not from kashrus, not from being a sofer, not from being a shoyechet, not from being a moel, not from doing Chevra Kedisha. I do Mila, Chevra Kedisha, tax returns, birth, death, and taxes, a full service, but the money is not from rabbonus. I would like to perhaps dedicate this shiur to the Tzela Marav Zechet Tzadik Livracha. I'm not Hasidic in the slightest. Nobody's ever accused. Well, somebody once said I have Hasidic eyes. But even so, that I'm a Litvak, known as a snag, and the whole thing, but the Tzela Marav Zechet Tzadik Livracha made kashrus in America. And one of the klolim that he had is he did not give a hechsher to a place that was kosher because he gave the hechsher. He would only give a hechsher to a place that the balabos was already somebody who wanted to be kosher himself and whose house he could eat in, and as a result his products were kosher. We have a situation today where goyim gemurim, rishoyim gemurim pay money and get a hechsher, and we hope, perhaps pretend, that it's kosher and go on with life. The Tzela Marav was not that way. Tzela Marav made kashrus in America. He made real kosher meat, he made real kosher milk, and whatever he did was real kosher. As a klal gadol in life, you can't fool Hashem, and don't try to fool yourself. Many people think that they can do one or both of these things, and they are serious mistakes. Rav Moshe Bix Zeche Tzadik Livracha, in a Shabbos Shuvah Drasha, once said, "Tzalachta la'avoneinu Ki Rav Hu. Zolmoich Ozayim Vayla Rav Hot Gazoktas is Mister. Hashem, you should forgive us. V'salach del Avonenu Ki Rav Hu. Should forgive us because some Rav said it was all right. And this is a big problem. I had a little bit of correspondence of Malinowitz Shlita Mordaatra about the question of to whom one turns. And his advice was, very good advice, if you don't know anything, turn to your Mordaatra. If he says eat, eat. If he says don't eat, don't eat. If he says daven, daven. If he says shvaig, be quiet, be quiet. On the other hand, it does not absolve you of the responsibility. Now, many years ago, there were women who complained that they had morning sickness. I never had it myself. I was never pregnant. Not yet. But I understand it can be very uncomfortable. And some very nice researchers came up with a wonderful drug that would cure the morning sickness. And many sincere doctors read the literature given to them by the pharmaceutical company, prescribed the drug, and ladies took it. And 9 months later, their babies were born deformed. This drug was called thalidomide. And those of us who are my age and thereabouts, remember this, it was a horrible thing. The babies were not guilty of anything. The mothers only listened to the best advice, and yet the babies suffered. And Shulchan Aruch says that a nursing mother may not eat treif. No feet allowed to eat treif. What do you mean a nursing mother is allowed to eat treif? So the Mefarshim explain, we're talking about a case where it's pikuach nefesh. To save her life, she has to eat treif. She's got two choices. Either give the baby to somebody else to nurse, or suffer the consequences of not eating the treif. Because even though she's allowed to eat the treif in this circumstances, the effect will come through the milk to the baby. So, v'salach d'lavanena kiravu, even though you were sincerely correct to listen to the Rav, the result is going to be on you. And therefore, everyone is mechuyev. First of all, you're mechuyev to learn kol ha-Torah kula, all of the Torah. It says, "Kol halomed almanas lulamed, nosnim lo vilmod ulamed." Whoever learns in order to teach is given to him to learn and to teach. "Kol halomed almanas lasos, nosnim lo lilmod lishmor." Lamed lishmor v'laasos. That he will be zochet to learn it, to teach it, and to do it. And that's part of everyone's job. You have to learn as much as you can, not only on a theoretical basis, but on a halacha l'maaseh, a practical basis, not to put the responsibility on anyone else. It all ultimately comes to the individual. Do I decide to do this? Do I decide to do that? Take a simple case. Do I have to file a tax return or not? I can go to Rav A, and I know in advance. Rav A says no. And I can go to Rav B, and I know in advance Rav B says yes. Or I can learn through the subject and then discuss it both with Rav A and Rav B and see what's the appropriate thing to do. And the appropriate thing in all cases is to learn as much as possible and then discuss it with the people who know, and then you'll know what to do. I will say a word from my Rebbe Rav Yisrael Belsky Shlita, who is an advisor of the OU. He's not in charge of the OU. He doesn't make the decisions of the OU. He's an advisor of the OU. Many, many years ago, before he even dreamed of that, he told me a story that a certain balabas came to him and asked for a sock on a certain situation. And he said, "I thought, sir." And the balabas said to Rabelsky, "Couldn't you find me a heter?" And Rabelsky said, "Oh, that's what you want. That'll cost you money." He said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I'm mechuyev to teach you Torah for free, but what you're asking for is not Torah. There's no such thing as finding you a heter. Either it's osur or it's mutter. Occasionally, it's really mutter, but we're noig in isur, and therefore, under certain circumstances, shashukak, hesed maruba, a great loss, or a very difficult situation, we let you go with the basic halacha. If it wouldn't be basically mutter, then the fact that you're going to lose money on the deal, the fact that it's difficult, isn't going to help you. It's osur to murder. The fact that I need a little extra room in my apartment because we're having another child, so it's a dachak, we're squeezed in, that's not going to amount to the retzich, because retzich is osir. So that's the nature of a heter. Now the subject tonight is simanim and chosamot, or chosamos, or chosamot, whatever you want. We speak all the languages here. Simanim are indications, and chotamot are seals. So a siman shows you something, and a chotemet is in a certain sense an edus, a witness or a proof on it. Simanei kashrut, we know fish have snapir v'kaskeses, fins and scales. Animals have split hooves and chew their cuts. Where else do we have simanim in the Torah? Rachel and Leah. Yaakov wanted to marry Rachel. He knew Laban was a trickster. So he made secret signs to Rachel so that when they got to the Ichud room, he would be able to know for sure that it's really Rachel. But Rachel knew what her father had in mind, and she knew that her sister would be horribly embarrassed. And therefore, she told over the simanim to Leah, and Baruch Hashem, we have Arba Imahos. We have simanim not just in regard to kashas. We have it all over the place. I have over here. This is going to be basically kindergarten. Story, afternoon, and show and tell. All right, this is a bottle of vitamins. The vitamins have a hechsher. Many rabbonim believe that you don't need a hechsher on vitamins. I'm not getting into that issue at all. The theory is that when you are taking a vitamin, you're not eating the vitamin, okay? So aside from the hechsher from the Sverov and the hechsher from the Olu, this is wrapped in a piece of plastic. So I will know if it has been tampered with, right? So I use my trusty thumbnail. I open up the plastic. I open up the lid. And lo and behold, there's another seal, another chotemet, because Frida wants to make sure that when I get these vitamins, they're going to be the real thing, and I'm not going to sue them because somebody tampered with the vitamins. We know there have been lots of cases of tampering. So simanim isn't just a question of kashrus. Simanim we have in Kol HaTorah Kulo. I will tell the story of Eschatai Ani Mazkir Hayom. Many years ago, I won't mention Eschatai. I was stopping in a certain shul in Brooklyn, very crowded place, and it was, I think Yom Tov might have been Shabbos. In any case, I was standing in back of a rail, and I had my raincoat hanging over the rail during the entire Shacharis, Kriyas HaTorah. Musaf, my hand was on that raincoat. Came the end of davening, I pick up the raincoat to put it on, and somebody came up, that's my coat. I said, you know, I've been standing here for 2 hours with my hand on this coat, this is my coat. And he said, that's my coat. And I opened up the coat, and I showed him that my name was sewn on the coat, and I said, if it's your coat, how come my name is on it? So another case of simanim. It doesn't mean I didn't lose the raincoat, actually. But, so we have simanim everywhere, not just in kashrus, we have it all over the place, and we need them. We need them to, in order to make sure that the thing we get is the thing we intended to get. Now the source for that, there are two sources in the Gemara. One is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Lama Tes. Let's see. The Amarov, Chavis Oser Bechosim Echot, Champag Mutter Bechosim Echot. What is Chavis? What is Champag? The Gemara goes on to explain. And there's an argument about it here and here, what the ches is, but basically it comes down to you need two chosamos for chavis, which is chatichas dag, a piece of fish that no longer is associated with the scales or fins, basar, meat, yayin, wine, and techeles. Techeles is the blue thread that some people wear, and some people say, what are you crazy? You think that's really techeles? So those four things need two chosamos. Champag is cholov, murais, which is kind of fish brine, fish juice, hay is pas, and gimel is gvina. Those need one chosam. Are these lists exclusive? The list of chavis is probably exclusive. Those things must have one chosam. The list of champag, of the things that need one chosam, is not all inclusive. Basically, anything that you are likely to be fooled about, that it's worthwhile to fool somebody about, you need to have some kind of a siman of kashrus. So we'll have here show and tell, show you all the different kinds of things. Chatichas dag. I have my trusty can of tuna fish. Starkist in America has an OU. In Israel it has three different hashem. There's a Starkist plant in Israel. They produce OU tuna fish. They produce Rabbanut tuna fish. And they produce Eda Charedes tuna fish. And there is a difference in the claims made by each group what is involved with their tuna fish. In America, the OU accepts the concept that they can fish a whole fish load of fish, unload them at a factory somewhere, or even process them on the boat without a mashgiach examining every fish, put it in a can, and I won't say shalom al yisrael, but something al yisrael. Let's go to the other extreme, which is the Eda Charedes, and they will insist on seeing every fish, we hope, and that the cooking process is initiated by a Jew, and that it's put into a can. But let's, for the moment, ignore all the other aspects of it except for the simanim. Right? So I have here a printed Eda Charedes. I have some information on the top of the can. If I open the can, you will know. If I remove this label, I don't think I'll be able to reuse it on another can of fish. So I have an underlying question, though. Is this considered an adequate siman? So as we go on, we will discuss what makes a siman adequate and what not.
Basar?
So when I was in America, every piece of meat that was shechted immediately received a tag saying it was nishkat. Then they took this purple dye or ink, which is terribly unhealthy, and wrote all over the animal what day it was shechted and various other things to identify that this is a behemoth that was shechted. Then they did the bedika, they do an examination of the lungs. First the shoyechet rolls up his sleeve, sticks his arm into the lung cavity, feels the different parts of it, if any are connected, and so on and so forth. Hopefully there are no connections, then it's really glot. Or there are only a few little connections, and then we call it glot even though it's not. Or it has some bigger connections, and we will take the lung out, and we will examine it, and we will blow it up, and hopefully no bubbles will be seen in the water, and then we will declare it kosher. And then we put another tag on it. The other tag will say glot, or it will say kosher. And we will also continue to write information on the meat. So here we can pass around this bag full of pieces of the meat. We soak and salt all of our own meat. And in the process, and in the process, I cut off these things because my wife said, you don't want to eat that purple ink, do you? And I said, no, of course not. And so we brought it in for show and tell. Yayin. Here's my trusty bottle of wine.
One question.
Yes.
Well, by the two of the plants in Israel, is it the same plant where the badats and the
OU? The starkist, as far as I know, and I haven't been there. I want to be there, but I have never been there. As far as I know, it's all one plant. And whether they really check each fish, I've heard contradictory information, even in regard to the Eda Charedes. And nothing that I'm showing you, except one thing here, is something that I'm telling you, this I know 100% you're allowed to eat. We'll see that soon. Okay, so I have a bottle of wine here. Again, on the back, I have an Eda Charedes. On the cork itself, it says the name of the winery. First of all, if a wine bottle doesn't have a cork, bechlal, you know it's an inferior kind of wine. And if it doesn't have the name of the winery on the cork, even among the cork wine is not that great. Okay, so they put a cork with their own name on it, and then they put something over the top. And again, I mean, this wine, somebody brought it to our house because they wanted to drink it at our house. I never drink any wine anyway. The only grape product that I consume, Bli Neder, except B'Shas Hatzchak, is grape juice made by my wife. So suppose, for instance, you know, we only drank part of the bottle of wine. Now we are going on the airplane. We want to have a little something to drink on the airplane, and so on. If we can get this through security, which we can't anymore, so I'll put it in the suitcase. And the TSA guys are going to open up my suitcase and they're going to manasseh my wine. So how do I seal this wine again so that it'll be kosher at the other end, forgetting about the issue that it's going to spill out all over my Shabbos turkey? What?
It's boiled.
I wouldn't say that. You can't assume that. Oh, this one says that it's mevushal. Yeah. It says mevushal al yedei pistur. So pasteurized wine is a machlokas whether that's called mevushal or not. All right. I thought it was a good bottle of wine, but you're right. It's mevushal. Maybe. Okay, so I will reach into my trusty bag of tricks. These used to be made out of lead, but since health concerns, they now make them out of some junk metal. I put it on the top. Don't really have to have one of these things, but I was in the grocery store 2 days ago. Was that Shabbos?
Not on Shabbos. So today is Monday? Maybe it was yesterday. In any case, there was a bottle of wine which had this exact same symbol on the top, meaning this is a totally generic symbol. It's no proof of anything. So to make this a foolproof kashrus thing, I will take my trusty masking tape, making sure that it's not the junky kind that has no glue left on it. And I will do two things. I will put a piece of tape this way. Three things, actually. Then I will put a piece of tape the other way. Not very good.
How the TSA guys are for sure
going to open it. Yes, well, the truth is, these days with TSA, it's not a good idea to travel the flop. Well, you have a choice. Either you appear on a porn show, or you are given a very physical relationship with the guard. So it's not a good situation. Okay, so I put on the second piece of tape. Put in a little beard just for good measure. And I have DNA testing on the line. Alright. I tear it off. And then I take out my pen. You know it says pen yifte. And I've got all these junctures here, right? The places where the tape overlaps. And I sign my initials. And I do it lots of times. Now, anyone who wants to mezayef, wants to forge this, I say, give it a good try. So now I can put this down, I can pick it up. This has got good chesamos on it, because you can't remove this tape and preserve the way my initials went over the overlap, so I know when I come to open this again, this is my kosher wine, nobody did any tricks with it. All right, chavis, we said, chaticha dag, boser, yayin, techeles. So this is the techeles. It comes in one of these plastic sealed bags, which anybody can seal. The plastic sealed bag does not impress me in the slightest. Then they have their printed niputz lishmona. That's another machlokus, and we paskin. You don't need niputz lishmona, but I try to have it. And then inside, I'm not going to open this right now because I'm going to take this on the airplane. They have where the tailor is attached, there's sticking through a hole here. They have another label over it. So they are considering this to be two chosamos. I'm not saying whether I do or not. However, I buy these from a Shomer Shabbos Jew, and they never pass out of the hands of a Shomer Shabbos Jew, so I really don't get into the issue. It says Tehillah is only bought from a mumche, so to the extent that we have mumchim today, that's what I get it from, directly. And so I don't really have an issue, but that is what they're doing to make the two chotamot. So we've got cholov, no, a piece of dag, boser, yayin, techeles, and chavis. Right? This is the way it really should be done. This is lox. I'll read you a little bit of the label here. First of all, this is my initials, hand done. This is my seal at the Av Beis in Beverly Hills. Salman lox, kosher l'mahadrin min mahadrin l'anshe ula anshe emes. Mahadrin, you know. Mahadrin and Ahadrin, you know. Anshe Emes are the people who are going to the last drop. Tachas Bikuch Tamidi Uzvit Samud. So, the speaker last week said that it's called Hashkocha Tamidis, means he's there regularly, but not necessarily Samud, not necessarily all the time. So this is Pikuch. I didn't say Hashkocha. I said Pikuch. Why? Because my wife made it, and I was there, but I can't give Hashkocha on myself, and I can't give Hashkocha on my wife. I was watching. Pikuch tamidi v'tzamud shel nirei shemayim anshe emes mishas hasaras hakaskasim ad chasimas ha'ariza. From the time of removing the scales until the chasima was put on. Hadad nikne b'chanut im hechsher shel eid ha'charedis. Right? Yechiel talks about this all the time. I can tell you I bought it in the eid ha'charedis, but unless the eid ha'charedis gives a tu'udah, it doesn't have the hechsher of the eid ha'charedis. No coloring added that could be not kosher. No worms. Adag, v'nimlach b'melach im hechsher shel ha'edah charedes. We use ha'edah charedes salt too. Aval me'achar sheyotza min ha'chanut ha'edah ha'charedis lo achraim ala kashus. Since it went out of the store, the Eid HaRedis takes no responsibility whatsoever. If you show this to the Ravad and the Gavad of the Beis and Tzedek of the Eid HaRedis and ask them, are you allowed to eat it? They'll say, I don't know. Because they don't. Because they didn't take achrayus for this. I took it out of their store. We took it off of the scales and the fins. And therefore, they have no achrayus. I'm telling you, me to you, and you can believe me or not, that this was bought in an Eid HaRedis store. But they don't take any achrayus. Elohu kasher b'toras eid echad ne'eman b'yisurim. We have a klal in kashrus. One witness is sufficient in matters of isur v'hetzer. If I want to make him pay me money, I need two witnesses. If I want to say that she's a mugareshes, I need two witnesses. Kashrus eid echad ne'eman. One witness is believed, and they say, a feeble rabbi. Even a rabbi is believed in kashrus. Nasa Aydeh Rabbanit Shal Rav Tzvi Ben Mordechai Rogan Min Kadmus Dinah Abbezmuz. We don't need that. Machil Dag Salmon Melech of Pilpil Shachor Bilvad Lo Mu'ushan Mishmor B'Karer. Alright, now you'll see we've got initials here, initials here, initials there. This bag is just an extra bag because we put it in the freezer. Don't need that bag, and that bag therefore doesn't have any chosamos. And okay, you can pass it around. And that is we'll call it Mahadran Manahadran way of making the Chosamas, because you only really need two. But if somebody could get in here and switch it, I'd like to see how. Maybe Harry Houdini. Opposite extreme. Chosamas. We went into the supermarkets. Gittel, do you know where the envelope went?
Huh?
I'm telling my wife. Do you know where the envelope went?
Sorry, what?
The envelope.
It's not in there?
No. All right. Anyway, we went into three different supermarkets to see what the matzav was, how they packaged, or how they did the chosamas on the meat. So you can see what we got here. Tudas hachsher, certificado de kosher, chalak buchshar, and basa bakar tachun 100% TV. That's what we have here in this package. Because you could just reach into the freezer case and pull out these labels from seven different kashrus organizations, just lying there in the freezer loose. Some of them fell off of the packages of meat. Some of them came out of the boxes. And you can see it's very easy to reuse them. And they are totally, absolutely meaningless. And it was not limited to only Shvacha Hefsherim. This is from the She'eris, which is considered one of the better Hefsherim. I'm not saying it is, it's just considered. The way that She'eris packages the meat, and when we first came to Israel, we asked the people in our kvutzah, you know, we were getting the Eid HaRedis, which is like buying the high price spread. And they said, you could buy the She'eris, because it's 100% chalak, glat, and it's much cheaper. And it is much cheaper. Well, let's just say this is a complete bag, right? Now, a plumba comes from the Latin word meaning lead. They used to have lead seals, metal piece on the wing of a chicken and on the cows and so on. So they still call it a plumba. So She'eris puts the meat inside a bag. This happens to be, for meat. And they put the plumba over here on the bottom of the bag. And I have a wire on the top of the bag. Well, hello, I can defrost it, I can take off this wire, I can take off the piece of She'eris meat, and I can sell it to a guy who's mocked to eat only She'eris meat, and I can put anything in this bag that I want and just put another metal wire on top, and nobody will be able to tell the difference. There's a store in Los Angeles called the Kosher Club, and when they opened up, on these two loose tags were inside, which, again, are meaningless. When this store opened up in Los Angeles, I took my wife, I said, we're going to go to the store. We are only going to look, we are not even going to buy a package of cookies. And they had all kinds of vacuum-packed meat with all kinds of tu'udot hechsher. I said, all I have to do is take this home, defrost it, I've got a vacuum-pack sealer myself, and we can put anything we want. So here I put lizards, plastic lizards in the bag instead of putting a piece of pork, because I didn't want to go into the pork store. But and besides, the plastic lizards are cheaper than the pork, but it's easy to do. And there's big, big bucks in this. Big bucks. Just to give you an idea of how much bucks, you know how much you pay for kosher meat. If you're from America, you know how much you pay for kosher meat in America. A friend of mine, Gabriel Cohen, should live me well, a long and happy life, made a shechita in Los Angeles. And I went to the shechita. And you had Rav Gabriel Cohen, the Rav Amachshir, you had the wholesaler of the meat, you had the owner of the shlachtois, of the slaughterhouse, and you had another guy, all, and the shechita, all making money off of this meat. And they shechted 40 animals. And they only took 4, because they were only taking the real glot. And the real glot cows in America are like 10%. That's it. If they're selling you 40, 50% glot, it's really not. But they only took the real glot cows, and I asked them, Gabriel, how much more does it cost to produce these 4 animals than the price of trace? And he said, 50 cents a pound. Taking into consideration the rav, the shlachtois, the shoichit, the wholesaler of the kosher meat, 50 cents a pound is the only difference in cost at that level between kosher and trace. And yet, everyone is out to get the big bucks and the big cheat. So, okay. Now, I will tell you a story from when I was younger and my kids were very young. We used to go on hikes and barbecues, and we had hot dogs, which we thought were kosher hot dogs, and I wouldn't recommend them to you today. And you put the hot dogs on the grill, and you're playing frisbee, or you're walking around, or whatever you're doing, and you're not keeping your eye on the meat all the time. There's a halakha, which we will get to very shortly, called Basar Shenis Alin Min Ha'ayin, which actually in the list of things I should have told you about before. We read the Gemara about Chavis and Champag, the things that need Chosamas. There's a concept of Basar, which is hidden from the eye. And Basar, which is hidden from the eye, is not kosher to use anymore. So if we would be wandering around while the meat is on the barbecue, out in the open, can't eat it anymore. So I took my knife, and I carved the word kosher into the pieces, into the hot dogs. And you could clearly see it as the hot dog barbecued more. You could see it more. And this is 30 years later. My kids remember that very clearly. A tremendous chinuch lesson. And my kids, believe me, know all about chosamas. So what constitutes a chasima or a siman? Something which is clear that it is the way it was made. The Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch talk about one Hebrew letter being one chosam and two Hebrew letters being a second chosam. And then they say, but what if there are Yisrael Mumar, a Jew who's not religious, or worse, Chas V'Shalom, or a Goy who knows how to read or write? Then that's not called a chosam. What about defus? If the Goyim have defus, printing, then printing is not a chosam. In Los Angeles, there was a hasher is still there. They started to make Chalav Yisrael milk. And Chalav Yisrael milk, the din in the Gemara is that it's also to drink Chalav Shecholvo Akum, milk which was milked by a goy, Ve'en Yisrael Ro'eyu, and the Jew didn't see the milking. And I'm sure you're aware, perhaps not, maybe I shouldn't even tell you, but the Rav Moshe Feinstein Zecher Lebracha said that under certain circumstances, you're allowed to use what he called Chalav HaKompanies, the milk of the big companies. And even though I'm a little nothing, and Rav Moshe Feinstein was the Gadol Hador, I am ready and willing to say, and I didn't get a job once because I said it, in this area Rav Moshe made a mistake. But that's really not our issue. Assume for a minute you must have only Chalav Yisrael, you must have Chosamas on it, right? And the people who are paying the extra bucks for the Chalav Yisrael are doing, because I think you're supposed to do that. And what was his siman of his milk? Because he did it in a regular dairy, he koshered the equipment, and they washed the milking of the cows, and they put it into bottles. So what was the siman that this is the Chalav Yisrael? The date was upside down. Well, hello, the date upside down is not a siman, it is not a chosam. So we used powdered Chalav Yisrael milk, not powdered stam milk, which some rabbanim allow, and it's again based on a false assumption that you can't make powdered milk out of a chalav of a behemoth tamea.
let me tell you, you can buy powdered horse milk all over Europe. And at least a few years ago, there was talk of making a powdered horse milk factory in St. Louis, Missouri. So you definitely can make powdered milk out of Dover Tame. And so we used Cholerisal powdered milk instead of using this thing that had the date turned upside down, except the one time that I went out to the milking myself. So that's not a semen. If you print it, okay, two war stories. That was the story of the season kosher Pesach Mashgiach Tamidi sardines, and people opened them up and found octopus. And my friend called up the OU, how could it be, you know, you have octopus in the kosher Pesach Mashgiach Tamidi sardines? They said, well, we really do have a Mashgiach Tamidi at the factory. And these sardines were not produced at our factory. They were produced somewhere else, and somebody just brought them there and put the labels on them. Well, it means that the Mashgiach did not have control of the labels, and it means those labels are worthless. Worthless, zero, nothing. Okay? Now, a second story is the NCSY convention. For those who don't know, NCSY is a Kiruv organization, and they have Shabbatonim to bring people close to Yiddishkeit, and they have one in Florida, and they served Heinz vegetarian beans, and some of the Balei Tshuva said, I didn't think they would be serving me this here because there was pork in the vegetarian beans. And how did it happen? Because there was a Heinz factory that the OU did not know existed. So, if the Mashgiach does not control the apparatus of putting on the simanim, as far as I'm concerned, those are not chotamot. Many years ago, I guess either before or in the beginning of World War II, or the United States entry into World War II, they made a cherem in New York that it's usur to eat a chicken that does not have a plumba, meaning a metal seal which is usually placed on the wing of the bird. There was a tzaddik, I'm not 100% sure whether the tzaddik is still alive and he's a shlita, or he has gone on and is a zeichut tzaddik lebracha. We will hope that he's a shlita and wish him many happy years. A fine yekke, and you can understand he's a yekke from the story. He was drafted into the army, and so therefore he quickly learned shechita, so he'd be able to have a little bit of chicken here and there. And what he did is he shechted the chicken, and he put the plumba on, and then he removed the plumba and koshered the chicken and ate it. Because there's a cherem, you can't have a chicken without a plumba, even though he shechted it, even though it never left his hands. A cherem is a cherem, and he made sure that there was a plumba on the chicken. The opposite end, a person named Seymour Weiss owned a slaughterhouse in Pittsburgh, was later taken by the IRS, and he shechted animals. He didn't, but the shechet shechted animals there. And he told me that one time he wanted to buy chickens, so he went to his friend who had a chicken slaughterhouse, and the friend reached into his pocket and pulled out a handful of these plumbas of all different kinds of hechsherim and said, what kind of plumba do you want on your chicken? So, in other words, the owner of the slaughterhouse, who was not the Rav, not the Shoichet, not even so ay-ay-ay, he had as many of whatever kind of plumbas as he wanted. Problematic. In Israel, there's something called the plumba law. The manufacturer is not allowed to deliver plumbas or stamps with kashrus claims on them, except to the person named or the organization, an official representative. If they do, they're violating the law. And you know that nobody would ever violate the law, so that's perfectly under control. Some more war stories. My wife was giving birth to my first child. He was a cesarean section candidate, and she was in labor starting Shabbos morning until Sunday night. And she was in Jacoby Hospital because it was premature. And she would have been in Einstein Hospital where everything is supposed to be kosher. Jacoby is a city hospital where everything is far from kosher. And they brought her a tray of stuff, gelatin and who knows what, liquid diet. So we said she can only eat kosher. So they took the tray away. And 10 minutes later, they brought back the same exact tray with the same exact items and a little piece of paper on it where it said, kosher liquid diet. Thank you. So, that's another thing that's worthless. Now, I am not in the kashas business. Very seldom have I been in the kashas business. Those cases where I have given out something under my name with my achrayas, I personally signed every single package. It's a difficult thing to do in a major concern, but for sure, the labels may not be under the control of the factory and the Mechal Shabbos. Now let's talk for a moment about ne'amanus, or ne'amanut, trustworthiness. The Shulchan Aruch Yerodea, Kuf, Yotes 119, talks about a person who's choshed ledover. We're talking about a Shomer Shabbos Jew who eats kosher, but let's just say he eats Chodesh Chutz Laretz. And again, the Chodesh Chutz Laretz is a whole other shiur. But on a very simple level, understand that the Pashtus of the Gemara, it's treif. The Rosh, the Rif, the Rambam, it's treif. Rav Yosef Karo, the Machaber, it's treif. The Ramah, it's treif. The Arzarul, you might have a little way out. Now we're putting, we have a big scale, right? We're coming up the Yom Kippur. On one side of the scale, we've got the Rosh, the Rif, and the Rambam, and the Machaber, and the Ramah. On the other hand, we have the Arzarul. All of a sudden, it's kosher. What? Okay. Chodesh Chutz Laretz, when you plant grain,
yeah,
you're not allowed to harvest it, and you are not allowed to eat it until the bringing of the Omer on the second day of Pesach. May we speedily build the Beis HaMikdash and bring the Omer. If there is no Beis HaMikdash, if there's no Omer brought, then Min HaTorah, the morning of the 16th day of Nisan, is Matir, and Midrabanan, Yom HaNef Kulo Asur, it's not Mutter until the night. Why? Shema Mehera Yivana Beis HaMikdash, may it be His will soon. Maybe the Mikdash will be speedily built. And this is where Rashi says, when is it going to be built? If it was built Erev Pesach, so they would have already brought the Omer. You can't build the Beis HaMikdash on Yontif. You can't build it on Motze Yontif. So then if they built it in the morning, then why didn't they makriv? So he says, it must be that it's coming down from Minas Shamayim already built. He doesn't say it has to. Because in Yechezkel, he says, why does Yechezkel give us all these measurements of how to build the Beis HaMikdash? So they won't know how to build the Beis HaMikdash. But if you have to know how to build the Beis HaMikdash, vice tois, it seems to me that you have to build the Beis HaMikdash. But that's again a whole other shmooz, right? So we won't get into that issue. It's a very controversial. Okay. Now, we have a theory which is behind almost all of the Hefsherim that you know and love, called Yotzei V'Nichnas. Now we have a Yotzeis and we'll have a Nichnas. A Yotzei V'Nichnas means the Mashgiach is not there all the time. And the owner of the factory is a Machal Shabbos. And the fact that the Mashgiach comes occasionally, we hope more often than not, we call that Yotzei V'Nichnas. And for some things it's good, and for some things it's not good, and you have to understand under what circumstances it is good. But almost all of that sharing depend on this concept. And the concept depends on the idea that the factory is doing the same thing all the time. So that any time the Mashgiach comes, day or night, he's going to see the same thing. And that's how you can do it. Because you assume that just like they're doing this now, they're doing this yesterday, and they're doing it tomorrow, at any moment they can expect me to arrive, and therefore they're afraid to mishanet, to cheat, and so on, and so I have this, I can give my hefsher. I was very briefly a mashgiach. Now you could understand why after 10 minutes the Rabbi Machshe would want to fire me, but in fact I quit. And I was a representative, and we will name names here, of the Chof K in Los Angeles. And I had five things that I was supposed to examine. One of them was called C&C Cola. Now in those days, people drank soft drinks without a hasher. That's a fact. And so to have a hasher already on a soft drink, that was already a big milo. I drove up to the C&C Cola plant. I went into the office and I said, I'm here to inspect the plant. They said, you don't have an appointment. You can't come in. That means that there's no Yotze V'Nichnas. That means there's no mirtas. It means that it doesn't matter whose name is on the bottle, it has no hefsher. Nekuda. That was the CNC Cola. Litovasam, there was a place that made maraschino cherries, and I drove up to the maraschino cherry place, and they welcomed me in, and they showed me everything, and I examined everything, and there were no problems. Okay. The third place made bakery ingredients. That is to say, a bakery would buy from them to put into their breads and cakes and so on and so forth. And they had two plants. One was the wet plant and one was the dry plant. And I came to the wet plant, and the Balabas is the only guy there. And nothing whatsoever is happening. The vats are empty. The pipes are empty. There's nothing. I said, what do you do here? He said, when we get an order, the tanker drives up. He connects his hose to this pipe over here. The stuff runs through. It comes out over there. And that's what we do when it happens. But nothing was happening. So, I mean, what shall I tell you? So I said, okay, give me directions to get to the dry plant. He said, well, I can't go with you right now. I said, I don't care if you can go with me right now. I need to go to the dry plant right now. No, you can't. Okay, so eventually I got to the dry plant, and all this was for $25 per visit that I was getting, if you can imagine. And so I went to the dry plant eventually, and we were giving Hesher on some of the stuff, but not all of the stuff, and I see bags labeled with the symbol for Rabbi Ralbag. Now, for those of you who don't know, Rabbi Ralbag's Hesher was never accepted by anybody. I mean, we had a Maisa with using shoe polish as tefillin paint. And Rav J. David Bleich Shlipe should live many happy long years and continue to be Oved Hashem. We asked him, you would call up the shoe polish company, and first they would tell us, no, there's nothing in there, no animal, vegetable, no animal, no insect, no nothing, right? And then eventually they got so many calls, they said, and even Rabbi Ralbag uses our shoe polish for his tefillin. And I told it to Rabbi Bleich, and he said, until you said that, I was willing to believe the company. But once he was mixed in, forget it. Okay? So before we started, I asked Rabbi Malenowitz about naming names and pointing fingers, and he's here plotting away, but just to continue. Okay. So anyway, one of the ingredients used in this plant that I was supposed to give a hechsher on was Rabbi Ralbag hechsher. Soy product from Texas, so I called up headquarters. Are you accepting this? And he got on the phone, and the Balabas claimed that this particular product could not be used on the same machines as the stuff that we were supposedly giving a hechsher to. Very nice, thank you. And then I went on to the flavoring plant. Well, the flavoring plant was, we'll say, between this room and the ladies' section. That's how big the whole thing was. And it was like a chem lab. Shelf after shelf of flasks, beakers, test tubes of stuff. Unlabeled stuff, labeled stuff, who knows what stuff, and a few lab tables, and I called up New York, and I said, what am I supposed to be doing here? Now remember, this concept of Yotzei V'Nichnes, as we said, is based on the fact that they're doing the same thing all the time, and anytime I show up, you know, that's what they're doing. And I said, what am I supposed to do here? Well, we're giving Hesher on these two flavors. Ask him for the formula cards. So I asked for the formula cards. The guy said, they're secret. He can't show them to you. Hello, I'm the Mashgiach, I have to know. So we called New York again, and they agreed to show me the formula cards without the percentages. And one of the formulas had port wine. I don't know about today, I'm not a wine aficionado, but at the time there was no port wine with Hesher in the whole world. And therefore, little problem, back to the drawing board. So that is my experience of the Yotzei V'Nichnes. Now, the Shulchan Aruch talks about lox. Not the lox that's passing around. I hope it comes back, because on the way back we might eat it. But about na'u, a min'al, a na'u, a ki, and a lox type of a thing. Does this count or not? And it depends on the circumstances. And in Los Angeles they had sort of, they claimed to have a mapecha, a revolution in the kashrus. A certain kashrus organization called the Rabbinical Council of California. They threw out all the Mechallel Shabbos who would not take a Mashgiach to Midi. And the Mashgiach was supposed to have the only key to the cooler. And that's how they would control it. Well, I will tell you a story. I had an office in a fancy office building where you pay tons of rent and have nice amenities and so on. And it happened that there was a direct entrance to the fire stairwell from my personal office, but it was locked. So I called up my friendly locksmith, and he came and he produced me a lock against the law, against the will of the landlord, but I had a way to escape from that building that caught on fire. So that's how much the lock is worth. If you have a butcher store, and you are inside your butcher store, but the mashgiach has the only key to the cooler, and you call up a locksmith and say, you know, my wife has the keys and I have to get in, the locksmith is going to give you a key. It's that simple. And one of the stores in Los Angeles, this kosher club that I mentioned before, there was no cooler to have a lock to, for the mashgiach to have the key, only key to, and they had electronic surveillance on the store so they would know if the guy came in at night. And one of the machers in the organization, I was in the car with him riding to some kind of a simcha, so I took the opportunity to grill him a little bit. We didn't have to consult him because we were doing it on the grill. And a little inside joke for the kashrus mevinim. And I asked him, you know, what's doing here? And he said, well, they don't have a cooler that they get up the alarm. We have this electronic monitoring, and we know it works because we caught him going in at night, and we made him give an explanation. Very nice. He had to give an explanation. There was a maisa with Rav Shimon Schwab, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who was the Rav of Breuer's. Before that, he was in Baltimore. He was in charge of the Maryland Kashrus Commission, and he heard rumors of Hanky Panky, and they staked out the parking lot at 3 o'clock in the morning. Came a delivery of not quite kosher meat. And they were all arrested, because Rav Schwab was a very smart man, and he knew that, you know, locks and bagels are fine, but locks are not enough to keep the crooks out. Okay. So how should meat be packaged for sale in a non-from environment in a way that it can't be mezuyaf, or that it's very hard to mezuyaf? You can't make it impossible, but you can make it more and more hard. So what agencies are doing now, they're switching from the metal plumbas to holograms. Apparently, to make the hologram stamps is very expensive. And they feel that maybe they will be a little bit ahead of the game with the holograms. But you have to do it in such a way that the packaging with the labeling will be disturbed in such a way that it can't be reused if somebody tries to remove it. Now, many of you have probably never actually seen a chicken foot. This is a chicken foot with a hologram of the Eda Haredes. And this is their siman of kashrus. Now, this you probably also never saw. Of mitsunan lo mukshar, meaning this was not soaked and salted when we got the chicken. Most of them say hudach, nimlach, nishchat, and so on and so forth. We got this not kosher. We koshered ourselves. We cut the foot off. When the foot is off, you can take the plumba off and you can put it back on. But when it's attached to a chicken, it's not going to go over the foot and it's not going to go over the whole bird, right? So that's a pretty good siman. And if you try to tear it apart, it will actually tear, so you can't reuse it. So that's a good siman.
Here is it.
I'm not pushing any charedes. I don't buy every charedes. There's certain things we buy, certain things we don't buy, and I certainly don't get special thanks from them or anything. We use some of their products. All right. So this is how they package chopped liver. You've got this tin, or not a tin, it's a plastic. On the back is a label with their symbol of any charedes. Health department and so on, calories, carbohydrates, all the good stuff. And then on top of that, of course I didn't put any page numbers, so you might hear some stuff funny. On top of that, they put this, which also has a hologram, it has their label. The question is, can I now reattach this to a new tub or not? If I can reattach this to a new tub, then its value as a chosam is, shall we say, limited. So we buy these not at Supersol. We buy these at the kosher butcher who got it directly from Glatt Oaf, carried there by a Shomer Shabbos. So it never went out of Shomer Shabbos supervision. So I can't say for sure it's good. It's better than a kick in the pants, shall we say.
So if it never left the Shomer Shabbos hands, it doesn't need a chosam.
That's correct. Okay. So,
who is
the
testing that has never left the
Shomer Shabbos?
Yeah.
I know the procedura. I know the
place.
I know this place. I know that the owner is a Shomer Shabbos. I know the worker is always a Shomer Shabbos worker there. And I have met the delivery person who appears to be, I mean, a Hasidish type of a guy. Could be a Litvak in disguise. appears to be a Shomer Shabbos, shall we say. And the factory itself is under constant control of Shomer Shabbos. So we try. I strongly discourage my wife from buying wine or meat
in a place that's not itself a Shomer Shabbos place. So ideally, you must have... So we went to these grocery stores, and we checked all kinds of hashem, and the Eda Haredes chicken, which costs $22.90 a kilo in Super Chef Shuk, Chef Mahadron, whatever it's called nowadays, $22.90 a kilo, and at my butcher it's 37 shekels a kilo, big difference. My daughter does not kosher her own chickens. We do. So we get it at the butcher, and I was saying I can save 15 shekels a kilo, or a little bit less, you can do the math, because I buy my daughter's chickens for her, by buying her the chickens at the supermarket, or letting her buy them at the supermarket and I reimburse. And when we got to the supermarket, there were the chickens on sale, and they had a nice hologram and label and so on top. You turned it over, it was saran wrap, and you could easily open that saran wrap and put it on anything you like. And I called up my daughter and I said, it's costing me 15 shekels a kilo more, I'm buying you the chickens from the butcher store. And she said, are you sure, Tati? And I said, yep. And that's what they're doing. Okay, now, I order from my...
Whose fault is that? The Adas or the supermarkets?
Probably the Adas. I mean, you know, they could have put a plumb, but maybe they did put a plumb, but I didn't see it, on the oaf itself. If they put a plumb on the oaf itself in a way that the plumb couldn't be removed, then that would absolutely be good.
That's only one.
Well, it's a metal tag, it's got writing on it, it's got a hologram. We could put that together and we could call that a simba. If it didn't have the plumba, right? I'm only talking if there isn't the plumba inside on the bird itself. And if it's the oaf mechulak, if it's split, that could be problematic. You're absolutely correct, and thank you very much for pointing that out.
A butcher that has non-Jews working, but there's only the front person there?
That's okay. That's okay, and that's the way most of them are. And that's one reason why we kosher our own meat, because we don't want it to be koshered by Musa and Ahmad. Not that Musa and Ahmad don't know how to kosher, but, you know, a friend of a chavrus of mine from many years ago, his father ran a chicken place in Baltimore, and they shechted the chickens, and then the goy inspected the internal organs of the chickens. Now, in the old days, it's not so funny as you might think. In the old days, the balabasta, the lady, took the chicken to the shoichet. The shoichet shechted the chicken. She brought it home, opened it up on her kitchen table, and she looked at the internal organs, and if she saw anything too big, the wrong color, in the wrong place, doubled or missing, then she would go to the Rav with the chicken, and she would ask a shiloh. And that's why you have so many shilohs and shuvahs, that ladies bringing chickens to a Rav. How many people here ever brought a chicken to a Rav? Okay, we got one. I used to bring chickens. I used to live in the same building with Diane Post, the Shlita of Breuers. And I would regularly bring him chickens because there were bruises on the legs. And the question was, did it get beaten up before it died or after it died? If it's after it died, we don't care. If it's before it died, then we have to concern ourselves, was the animal hurt in such a way that makes it safe? But most people have never brought a chicken to a row, but it used to happen all the time. So the lady would look and see there's a problem. So here the goy is opening the chicken, and if it has anything not kosher, he gets to keep the chicken. So he's extremely machmir. He's looking out for the slightest possibility that the chicken is not safe. I'm not saying to do that, but Lamaisa, that's what they did. There's a gefilte fish place, A and B gefilte fish, which is available in Israel, very delicious stuff, under Ashkoch of Rabbi Horowitz. And I called up Rabbi Horowitz to see, does he inspect, or does the mashkir inspect, a Shomer Shabbos person inspect every fish? Because lots of people are mekel on that. I'm not saying they're allowed to be, but lots of them are, and we are not. We meaning the Rogans. And so I asked, does the Shomer Shabbos person inspect their fish? And he told me they used to have a system that they would pay the goy who was receiving the shipment $10 for every fish that was from the wrong species. So it was in his interest to find it, and he decided that that system really wasn't right, and he therefore made it that there is a Shomer Shabbos inspecting every fish. I'm not telling you that's what's occurring there. I'm saying that's what he said occurs there. In fact, we do eat it, but I'm not taking any tiny bit of a prize for it. If you eat it, you have to do your own checking, or your samach on the hatcher.
When you have the salmon that you wrote, that basically it boils down to Eidech and Nemen B'Yisurin.
Right.
So would that be a proper hatcher if you sold the salmon?
To people who knew me, loved me, trusted me, that's fine. You don't need a hatcher.
Not necessarily.
Well, yeah. Right.
The idea of a hechsher is somebody's giving an edus that this is edible, that this is kosher. The Jews may, according to the Torah or the laws of the Rabbanim, may eat it, and that's perfectly allowed. But I wrote very carefully that I'm not giving a hechsher. I'm not fooling somebody. There is a pizza store in Los Angeles. And here we'll go a little bit carefully, because maybe the facts have changed, but let's pretend we're 30 years ago, a beautiful pizza store, everyone, you know, how important, and pizza is practically kuach nefesh, and there are three partners, two rabbis and an Italian goy. One rabbi is Besmedesh in Chicago.
Sounds like a joke's coming.
Another, no. No, this is no joke, it's very sad. One rabbi is in Chicago, in Besmedesh, he's teaching actually. Another rabbi is in Los Angeles, at the time he was in Besmedesh, and the Italian boy is in the pizza parlor. And the rabbi let it be known, allowed people to think that he gave a hechsher on the pizza store, but in fact he was a partner in the pizza store. As far as I'm concerned, that's absolutely invalid. And if he would say, I'm a partner and I think it's kosher, people could evaluate that information. But if he says, he's got a pizza store and I'm giving a hechsher, that is different. And I maintain that once you leave the milchix, the chalav, right? We said chaviz, champag needs one chosam. We've got the chalav, we've got the gvina. Once you leave that in the hands of the goy, and it's his store, remember, he's the balabas, and when he owns it, the laws of mirtes are different. If it's my thing, and he's playing with it, and he knows he could be caught, he's a little bit more afraid than if it's his thing. What do you say? You're playing with your thing. So, you know, arrest me. So, that's a problem. Now, I place my... Yeah?
Let me change things.
Okay. Now, who's got the locks?
Me too, people do it.
No, my wife has it, she can keep it. She can pass it out among the ladies.
We're going to be taking some out and then see whether we can put the chutz up back on this afterwards.
Okay, so I call up my butcher and I tell him what I want, and he says, no problem, we'll have the delivery this afternoon. Now, if the delivery man shows up with a payas and a beard, if the delivery man shows up with payas and a beard, even his short payas, even he used a sam to remove his beard, we won't get into the discussion of electric shaver, which I believe is an issue deraisa, so we won't talk about that at all. But a Shomer Shabbos looking man or a lady who's wearing a shetel not from India, and believe me, the Indian hair is 100% kosher, you're just not allowed to wear it in the street, or she's wearing a tefil, and you know, we're not getting involved with any side issues, right? And a Shomer Shabbos person brought the meat to me, no problem whatsoever. If Ahmad, Musa, and Isa, and who knows, Bracha, come with the meat.
Or a Machal Shabbos.
Or a Machal Shabbos, yes. Or somebody who's choshud. Right? He's certainly the Shomer Shabbos, but he's choshud on kashrus. He's suspected of playing games. All those cases, unless the meat was properly sealed, I may not eat it. So it has to be sealed again in a way that I will know if something has been done, or that he's afraid that I might know. We were making a...
Two seals?
Yes, indeed. Two seals.
This would be a problem also for pizza.
Pizza, yes, indeed. We got that
but
on the list.
But pizza needs one seal.
One seal pizza. Unless it's pepperoni pizza, and then in that case, feed it to the seal. Okay, we were making a simcha, whether it was a bris, a bar mitzvah, or something. Anyway, we were getting cholent from an Eda Haredes caterer. And we started out with their parva cholent, and we wanted them to put meat in it. But we wanted to have the meat that we wanted in it, not the meat that's sold to the public. Now, Eda Haredes has three types of meat. They have meat which is shechted in Chutz La'aretz. They have two kinds of meat which is shechted locally. The one that they call glot, and the one that is glot. And we get the one that is glot. And so I wanted my meat to go into that cholent, and we had to make arrangements with my butcher and with Rav Bronstoffer Zeche Lebrocha, we can throw in the Zeche Tzadik Lebrocha, that he would
supervises himself, Rav Braunstoffer, put the chosamas on it, and then it would go to the caterer, and then the caterer was allowed to accept it. But if I would have brought it from my butcher, they weren't going to accept it under any circumstances whatsoever. The hefsher wouldn't allow it. That's the way it must be. Delivery must be by a from person, and if you're under a hefsher, it must be by a from person who is acceptable to the hefsher, or it must be sealed properly according to the halacha in a way that it can't be switched. Many years ago, a conservative rabbi told me a story which he thought was a little bit funny, but we think is just the bare minimum. He had a shul in Alexandria, Virginia, and he told me about somebody was making a bar mitzvah, and they wanted it to be kosher, and they brought a kosher caterer from Baltimore, and the goy drove up with the truck, handed the rabbi the letter, and asked the rabbi to remove the seal from the lock to the truck. That is the way it's supposed to be. Of course, once it got into the hands of the conservative rabbi, it wasn't kosher anymore, but at least up to that point, that's the way it must be.
So when a delivery person brings you from a takeout food store, it has to have chosamos.
It must have chosamos.
So I once, can I tell a war
sure.
story? So I went to a restaurant, I don't know, a fast food place. I went to a fast food place, and they had a certain hechsher, but the delivery had no chosamos whatsoever. So I called up the hechsher agency, whose name I will not say, and I asked them, how could you give a hechsher on this takeout food store? They make deliveries without any chosamos, and they have the nerve. They said, we only give a hechsher on the store. We don't give a hechsher on the deliveries.
And this is all over the place. You've got many caterers with excellent hechsher, and the hechsher specifically says, once it leaves the premises, unless your simcha has called for a mashgiach, which Yechiel talks about all the time, extremely important. If they tell you, you get to the chasna, what hechsher, they'll tell you, eid haredes. A quick check is look for the bottle of Carmel wine on the head table. Because eid haredes, whether it's kosher or not, we won't get into, unless we have time, eid haredes does not accept Carmel. So if there's a bottle of Carmel wine on the table, you know that it doesn't have hechsher of the eid haredes. What you do is you go into the kitchen, you ask to speak to the mashgiach. If there is no mashgiach, have a glass of seltzer. If there's a mashgiach, then there are questions to ask. If it was prepared in an Eda Haredes canteen, we'll call it, kosher house, whatever you want to call it, and it got there and there's no mashgiach, that means the Eda Haredes does not give hashgach on it. It may be 100% kosher, it may not.
Eda Haredes, by the way, is based on manual. I think it's page 65, if I remember correctly. That's for Feirush. Once anything leaves any of the stores, they're done.
Right. Okay, now let's take a... I promised to answer certain questions, and some of them are coming right up here on this page, so let's get to some of them. Under what circumstances can you leave a non-Jewish or non-from maid or babysitter in the house, and under which circumstances not? Now, my poor beleaguered wife is sitting in the back row, and she will tell you, and we lived in Los Angeles for 15 years, and in Los Angeles you've got tons of Mexicans who came across the border, and at 100 pounds each it takes 20 Mexicans to make a ton, and they are working for very low wages. And so even somebody who's in Coyle can afford to have a maid several times a week. And I told my poor wife, I said, you can have a maid, but A, she may not cook or touch the dishes, and B, she may never be in the house unless you are there. And my wife said, thank you, we don't need a maid that much. One of the rabbis that I used to respect in Los Angeles, because I used to respect him, I will not mention his name, was giving a shiur on the very subject of maids, a whole shiur on the subject of maids. And he told a story, they were sharing his family, a maid, with another family. In the morning at the other family, in the afternoon at his. And the other family called up and said, the maid just cooked the mazed bus of a chalav in our kitchen. Right? So this is somebody that we know, besides being a shiksa, is not trustworthy because she was told not to do it. She was told not to cook. And she cooked bus of a chalav. All the kalim are trace. They fired that maid, but they took a different maid. Another friend He's even a resident of Ramat Beit Shemesh, and I will not make the serious mistake of referring it to just Beit Shemesh. We are Ramat Beit Shemesh. Yechiel warned me. They had a maid, and it was justified because he worked full-time. His wife had a daycare at home. She was home most of the time, but she was working hard. She needed help. And they had a maid, and the maid was under strict instructions. She was not allowed to cook anything. But they didn't depend on the strict instructions. They had an electric stove, and when they went out of the house, they removed the fuse at the fuse box so that she couldn't cook even if she wanted to, and she tried. And a different maid, she was acting suspiciously, and the balabasta opened up her purse because she thought she had stolen money. No, her purse had busta v'chalav in it that she had cooked on their kainan, meat and milk.
Well, let's forget about cooking. You left a piece of meat open in the refrigerator.
Correct. So, we have a shimon in Shulchan Aruch which discusses this exact issue. You leave a non-Jew or Machal Shabbos alone in your house, which is the case of your babysitter. There's little babies, they're not really being mashgiach on too much. Or in the case of a maid, people go to work, they want the house to be clean when they come home. My son, his wife works, he works. They should live me well, and they should have lots of money and not need to work. And their circumstances made them think that they were forced to take a non-Jewish child care worker. And what they did, because my son was raised in my house after all, is his wife works close to home, and she's able to come in throughout the day, and they arranged with other from people in the building to come in unannounced into their house so that the maid would always know somebody may be showing up. But if the maid knows for sure that she's got clear time, let's just say that you live in Washington Heights, fine, okay, and your wife works in the Bronx, who knows what, and all the maid has to do is call up each of the people to say she had some issue that she had to ask them. She knows it's going to take an hour and a half with traffic for them to get home. That means there is no Yotze V'Nichnas. In a case where there was a Baal Tshuva, and he was living in his parents' home, and they had kalim for him, so he could cook kosher, and they bought kosher meat for him, and Rav Moshe Feinstein Zech Levrocha, the Godlador of America in a previous generation, said that in his own parents' house he should put chosamos on each piece of meat. I, at one point in my dochak, I had hired a babysitter for my kids when they came home from school, Russian lady, Russian Jewish lady, and she was too busy, she sent her kid, and I came home, and there they were with the pizza box. And they had heated up this pizza in my oven, and they had written in English, bad English at that, kosher pizza, but we knew it was not a kosher pizza, and I cried bitter tears. That was the first oven that I had bought as a brand new oven. I didn't have to kosher, and then I had to kosher it. And it is foolishness. I'll tell you another story, very important story. The parents are getting ready to go on a vacation, but they want to have a vacation from the kids also, so the maid is going to stay with the kids. And they are locking up the silver and the china and who knows what. And the kids said, why are you doing that? Because we're locking up the valuables so that the maid won't steal them. And the kids said, aren't we valuable? Which leads right into another story. Neighbors of ours came back in the afternoon or the evening. The only thing left in the house was the naked baby on the bare floor. They had stolen even the baby's diaper. And Baruch Hashem, they didn't steal the baby because another family, somebody stole the baby and they caught the baby at the border to Mexico. Baruch Hashem. But if the maid knows she's got clear time, the meat is safe, the milk is safe, the pizza is safe, the fish is safe, the dishes. Rav Moshe has a tshuva. Rav Moshe Feinstein Zech Levrocha has a tshuva. And he says, if it wasn't the mazed, meaning they didn't on purpose leave the maid, because this was a case where they had a neighbor who was supposed to come in and cook for the kids and check and so on, so he called that not the mazed. And he said, but the Eved, after waiting 24 hours, they could use the kalim again, because then it's only the Rabbanan. But in the case of the mazed, you left the maid like that, the kalim are also traced. not just the meat, not just the milk, not just the pizza, not just the fish. The kalim are also three benefits. It's China, you've got gahak tzaros. How do you translate gahak tzaros? Sarot mechutachot. Or olai hukot. Big problems. So, watch out. Now,
The maid that you have does not, never does any cooking. It only leaves tea. The fact that she's in the house on her own, that
is a problem. That is a problem.
What
did he ask? What? He asked if she's never doing any cooking, but you leave her in the house alone, is it a problem? And I said, yes, it's a problem.
Sorry, the original question still was, what if you need to have? I mean, there are people...
Yes, so then you have to arrange with the neighbors that are going to be coming in and showing up. Now, there is a concept now, we're living in a different door, the door chadash, you know, hidden cameras all over the house. I'm not saying that they are sufficient, but maybe, it's certainly it's evidence, but if she's a real smart maid, why is she working as a maid? But if she's real smart, then she knows how to get around it, but that would be something strongly to consider. But having the neighbors coming in and making unannounced visits and they having keys would be a big help.
It would be enough to hire to lock the refrigerator.
Yes. Now let's talk about locks. You have the locks, Kittle? Okay. I am a person who believes in lemaisa. So what does it mean, lemaisa? How many people are doing the daf yomi? Okay. No. Sorry. And we're in Mizvachim now, right? So right after Mizvachim comes Menachos, and there's a parak in Menachos called Hakomet Rabba. And that talks about tefillin, and Sifrei Torah, and mezuzahs, and good stuff like that. And you will find out that the way they did it in the time of Chazal, you would start with a skin, and if you took the whole skin, and you put it melach, salt, and kemach, barley flour, and then afatzim, tannic acid, and tanned the leather, on that you write sforim, Sifrei Torah, and Nevi'im, and Ksuvim. If you split the skin in two pieces, one is the thin outer piece and one is the thick inner piece, one is called klaf and one is called dochsustis. So machlokas, we've shown them which is the klaf and which is the dochsustis, okay? So part of our group, which I call Anshe Emes, is trying to restore the concept of using klaf made with afatzim instead of what we use commonly made with lime, and using the klaf and the dochsustis appropriately. And anyway, somebody wanted to write a Tanakh. They wanted to write Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim, and Tefillin and Mezuzahs, of course, on Mu'ubad, on something that was made with Afatzim, and he wanted it to be Avodas Yad, meaning that the turning of the drums and the putting in of the stuff is all done by hand. And it was available at that time, but not Avodas Yad. So I undertook to produce this for him, not for compensation. He paid for my rental of a car, because I was schlepping out to Petah Tikva every day for a month. He paid for the gas. I did not ask for any compensation, because I, lo navi v'lo ben navi anochi, I don't do this for money. And I went out for every day for 3-4 weeks to Petah Tikva to make him the gvilim, the skins for his Tanakh. Now, when they make Avodas Yad there, they hire a yeshiva man or a kollel man to turn the drum. I'm an old man, I don't turn drums anymore. And then at night, he puts a chain on the crank, and he puts a padlock on the chain, and he goes home. Well, since it was my skins that I was in charge of, I needed a key. Who gave me the key? The balabas of the factory, who is in the Chal Shabbos Bafrasya. So that means that lock was worthless. So what did I do? I took tapes just like this and put them on the keyhole and on the chain and on the crank and on the side door, which nobody ever closed up except me. And then the guy couldn't get in and he complained about it. Because normally he would reach in and test the leather and who knows what. So, that's another case of chosamas, and that shows you about the locks again. Okay. Now, making a lot of progress here, it looks like. So I can tell you some more war stories, unless I skip a bunch of pages. Okay.
I ask a question?
Yes.
regarding pizza delivery. I imagine Rob, someone would deliver pizza, not religious, Rob would not take it. It's very hard.
First of all, the last time that I had a pizza was in 1964.
Assuming your children are
great. Now, Louis Tour that I would want to have the garlic bread, the pizza, whatever. Okay, so. You must have some kind of a chosim on it. Now, a glued, nice strong glue with the printed thing, which goes around the edge in such a way that they would have to tear it in order to exchange it. This is a siman which is most probably acceptable. I mean, anyone can print anything these days, it's true, but maybe we don't have to be choshish that they will. It would be nice if the mashgiach would sign every pizza, but it's not happening. But if you at least have that, you've done something. You've tried to do what God wants.
If you had a religious delivery person,
if it's a religious pizza store and it's a religious delivery man,
would not be required.
And then it's probably not required.
My question, what's the difference mean? What are you kosher for? In the delivery person, the non-religious person would suspect that he would push the pizza while the religious person would not push the pizza.
That's suspicious.
Why do you suspect one?
Why would he want? Okay, well, a religious person believes in the Torah.
Doesn't mean he's not looking to make money. I mean,
that's true. Part of the Torah is lifna iver lo titen mechshol. For the blind, you shouldn't put a stumbling block. So, if he's truly a Torah observant person, then he won't do that. You're right. You could have somebody who will do it for money anyway. And if he's a chasher, the guy, then you can't trust him even if he's a shomer shabbos. Yes.
There's no way.
Okay, let's not worry about the pizza. Let's talk about the butcher. Okay? I understand, but you see, we have a... When Chazal made a gezerah, generally speaking, we do not consider ourselves bigger or greater than Chazal, either in chokhmah, in wisdom, or in minyan, or in number. When they said Dominion, when they said in the Sanhedrin, they took a vote and said 61 to 60 that you may not accept Givina, which was sent in the hands of an Akum, without a Chosam, then that's it. Now we take the case of Gilui and we'll take the case of Mayim Achronim. Alright? The Rabbeinu Tam said you may use Mashka, which is Magula. What does that mean? It means I thought I might wake up in the middle of the night and I was thirsty. Right? So I put a piece of a glass of water by my nightstand, and I left it uncovered. And, of course, I've got my bowl of Nagel Master there, which I also left uncovered. And I wake up in the middle of the night, and I'm dying of thirst. So I quickly wash Nagel Master without leaving the bed, without going for Amos, and without pretending that the whole house is like four Amos, because those houses were little tiny houses, not like our big houses here. And I wash Nagel Master, and I reach over, and I pick up that water, and I'm just about to say Shachol Niyah B'dvaro, and I remember, wait a minute, snakes come along and drink the water, and they leave poison in the water, and therefore, it's Aser. Now, the question is, did Chazal make a gezerah, you may not drink Gilui, or did they inform you of a definite health risk, which even Goyim were mafid on, not to drink Gilui because of the danger of the snakes? Now, don't laugh, there are snakes in Yerushalayim. One of my wife's friends has gorgeous pictures of a gigantic snake at the Kaisel, actually on the Kaisel Amaravi, a gigantic snake like this wide. How wide was it, Gittel? It was wide. All right, so there are snakes here. Rabbeinu Tam lived in France, and he didn't know about snakes. He said, we don't have these snakes here. You don't have to worry about it. You can drink it. The Vilna Gaon said, for every word of Chazal where they made a gezerah, where you know the reason, there are 100 reasons that you don't know about, and therefore you may not drink it ad hayom. So we, for instance, I didn't pass in the shayla myself, I didn't go through the inyan carefully, but our chevra does not drink it, we do not drink it, we do not have in the house, we do not serve it. Mayim Achronim. Mayim Achronim is because of Melach Sodomis, a certain kind of salt from the Dead Sea, which they used during the meal, and it would get on their fingers because they didn't use knives and forks. It was minhag avosayim b'yadehem. And at the end of the meal, they would have this salt on their eyes, and then the guy would scratch his eye. Salt would get in his eye, and he would, rachmana l'tzlan lo aleinu k'nayim ha'pu p'pu, and so on, be blinded. So Chazal made a gezeira, you must wash mayim achronim. You must wash your hands prior to benching So you will be able to go through the rest of the day and not go blind. Again, Rabbeinu Tam said, we don't have this kind of salt in our neighborhoods, therefore you don't have to wash my achronim. So, most Haredim will say, and this is just a guess, most Haredim do a zecher ledavar. What does a zecher ledavar mean? The minimum of washing mayim achronim is up to the second knuckle. So if you just have this little tiny cup about half of the size of my hand and go like that, or maybe you have a little bit of Pepsi left in the end of your cup, and do that, you are doing at best a zecher ledavar. At worst, you are being gross and disgusting. If you want to do what Chazal said, you will wash up to your second knuckle, and if you want to do what the Vilna Gaon said, you will walk into the kitchen, and you will take the same matla that you used before hamotzi, and wash a revias on each hand, and some people make a bracha. Now, so the Talmidei Hagaon paskin like the Gaon, most of the other Haredim do a zecher ledavar. The Yekes, and the Rabbi Chil used to be a Yeke, don't wash my machom at all. They paskin like Rabbeinu Tam. And who else paskins like Rabbeinu Tam? The ladies paskin like Rabbeinu Tam. How many ladies do you know who wash my machom? There are a couple of cases, strange as it may seem, where the ladies go by a different rishon than the men. In other cases, Haseba on Leil HaSeder, leaning on the night of the Seder, the Raviyah said, look, what Haseba? We sit in chairs. What are you talking? Chayrus leaning. Where do you lean in one of these chairs? So he said there's no Haseba required whatsoever. So ladies be Karon Paskin like the Raviyah, and men Paskin that you need it. Yes?
How do you do Haseba?
How do I do Haseba? I have a nice armchair.
Yeah.
And I lean on the arm. One year, and this is one of the reasons why I don't drink wine, the first year that I was married, my son. And it says, Zrizim Magdimin Lemitzis. He was supposed to be born after Pesach. And we were living in New York. This was in 1974. And at that time, there was not a single bakery in the entire New York City that was Makbid on Chodesh Chutzlaret. There was one in Muncie. There was one in Muncie. There was one in Chicago. And there may have been part-time in Los Angeles and part-time in Baltimore. I'm not sure when they started. And that was it. New York City? No, it was not.
Him was.
No, I'm talking bread.
Oh, bread.
Bread. Matzah is most of the time Yoshin. No, I'm talking bread. He was supposed to be born after Pesach. He was born on Tu B'Shvat. The bris happened to be on Shushan Purim. He was a little bit quick to come out, but a little bit slow to reach weight. So, why am I telling you this whole story anyway? This is a senior moment. Wine. Yes, okay.
No question, because the Gemara says you need a chosu.
Yeah. Okay. So, wine. So, he was born before Pesach. My mother, Aleha Sholem, died the first year I was married. And so she was not there that Pesach. And my mother, Aleha Sholem, she was a yekeh. She, top to bottom, cleaned the house, top to bottom, cleaned the kitchen. And I was the mashgiach. I came in from yeshiva. I covered everything with in those days, we weren't so rich. You covered things with newspapers and with dry cleaning bags and stuff. Everything beautiful, so on and so forth. And that year, she wasn't with us. And this Zuriz wasn't a bechor for pidyon haben, right? He was born a cesarean section. So a cesarean section has no pidyon haben. But legabe tanis bechorim, the fast of the firstborn, there is a fast of the firstborn. So the minhag is okay. The minhag is that if the son is too young, then the father is supposed to fast for him, or he quickly grabs a siyum. You know what we say? Now you see him, now you don't. So, my father lived in an area which was rachok from Asiyam, and I was fasting, and my mother wasn't there, so my wife, a new wife, and I were doing all the work, and we did not start the Seder very early. And we had received this beautiful Kiddush cup. I didn't measure it, but it looked like I really had a shear, and I used straight wine, none of this water stuff, none of this mavushal stuff, no jokes. I made kiddush, I drank the first cup, and we did a little bit of talking, and we'd come to the second cup, Kadesh Orachat Magi, and I said Rabbi Yosef, and I drank the second cup. Sivi, you did Haseba on the wrong side. Well, the second cup
Kuliyama lo pligan. It's very hard to find anything that nobody disagrees with. It's the second cup you did wrong, you have to drink it over again. Well, of course, I was drinking the whole cup also. I was a very firm guy in those days, not like now. And so I drank the whole cup. L'achar ma'aser, we measured it, and it was like, I don't know, 5 ounces, 7 ounces. It was a big cup. And I didn't make it past the soup. But anyway, back to the ranch. Okay. 11 years ago, Baruch Shem, my son, oh, we didn't talk about everything yet. How to buy fish. All right? Now, you are in the Holy Land, and you can go to Holy Jews to buy fish. Lots of fish stores have a hechsher. Now, we have no problems of worms in the fish and who knows what in the fish. These worms were just imported lately. We didn't know about them in the old days. Maybe they just started having worms. I don't know. But anyway, we'll ignore for the moment the issue of worms, or we'll assume we're talking about species that don't have worms. You go to the fish store. Which fish store? The Goyish fish store. El Pedro in Washington Heights. Tesco in Gateshead. You're going to the Goyish fish store. You look carefully and you see the fish. It is a fish shalem, a dog shalem. It has its bones, it has its scales, it has its fins. You know that this is a kosher fish. You ask the attendant to wash his hands. You make sure that the knife is clean. Soap is pretty good. And then, it would be even nicer if he had a special knife. Then you watch him as he cuts the fish, as he packages the fish. Keep not letting your eye waver a moment, because he's got a whole area full of fish there, cut, uncut, who knows what, right? Or you ask him to leave a little bit of the skin still on the fish. He wraps it up, he gives it to you, you take it home, and then you wash it very well under the running water. This was acceptable to the Rabbonim Chashuvim of the Dor HaChadosh of Kahal HaDas Ashur and Breuers in New York. This was acceptable to Rav Rakover, the Rav of Gates, at Zeich Levracha. So, this was acceptable. But, now you have to worry about the worms, and you must make sure that it was a daga shalim. You may not buy fillets without skin on them that were not properly under supervision the entire time and put with proper chosamos. And you may not eat shellfish and other things which are usher, of course, not even if they are in an OU can with a mashgiach meeting. Let's just say you are traveling, okay? So we will be traveling next week. Maybe Hashem will rain down the money here and I won't have to go. And I don't like to eat airplane food for a number of reasons. I'm very particular about the meat I eat. And Chodesh Chutzlaret is a problem. So my wife will be making lox, and she will be packaging it in 100-gram packages, and she'll put her tapes around it, and she'll sign it, or I'll sign it, and that's well and good. But let's just say that you did the airplane thing, right? So they're supposed to bring it to you sealed, so that you are the one who's breaking the seal, and you're keeping your eye out. Now, and you're in the middle of your meal, and you have to go to the bathroom, you have to do something, and I'm not sure exactly what that something is. I mean, we always travel with masking tape and markers. I'm serious. As long as the TSA doesn't start up with me, I don't start up with them. But you have to do something so that you will know that your meal has not been tampered with. I will tell you a story. The story is told as a true story, but I do not vouch for the story. Right? I try very hard to be careful about things like this. If I saw a story, I'll tell you the story. If I spoke to Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zeich Lebracha, or I spoke to Rav Moshe Bick, or I spoke to Rav Yosef Del Soloveitchik, Zichronom Lebracha, then I'll tell you I spoke to them. But if somebody else told me, Bishmo, then I will say, somebody told me his name and I don't vouch for it. Right? So, anyway, the story is that the guy had his kosher meal, and included a bread, and we won't get into the issue of Mazonah's bread, but a little hint would be wash and make hamotzi. He got up to wash. Washing in the bathroom is a separate issue. He got up to wash and he came back, and he's about to make hamotzi, and he said, wait a minute, what about basar shemisalim in ayin? Meat that was not under supervision. Yotze v'nichnas. And he didn't eat it. And the guy sitting next to him said, how come you didn't eat it? He said, well, we have this law that if it was left without supervision, we can't eat it. And the guy said, you know, I always wanted to taste kosher meat to see if it was any different, and I switched my piece with your piece. Whether the story really happened, I don't know, but this is the story they tell, and this is the thing you must be choshish for. You don't know what's going to happen. And the yotzer v'nichnas, it depends whether it's more yotzer or more nichnas. Yes?
If you have another kosher Jew, can't you have...
Yes, you absolutely can. Always travel with a buddy. It's a very good idea. If you're married, bring your wife. If you're not married, no, bring a friend. Very good idea. Excellent. Yes, that works. Okay, so we talked about pizza delivery, we talked about meat delivery, we talked about airplanes. Flour from Russia. How many people knew that the Ada Haredes flour is grown in Russia?
You could also not open the seal on the meat part
until you...
After you
flour. Correct. Okay, so the flour...
Is that only one chosen left?
There's an outer, there's an inner, there's a third one usually. Okay. The flour that... Baruch Hashem, Chazde Habore, the government did a nice thing. I don't know if you're allowed to say that, but they put the Ada Haredes in charge of the flour which is imported into Israel. We're talking specifically about wheat flour. I know nothing about anything else, right? I'm not talking about it now. The wheat flour which comes into Israel is supposed to be under Hashkacha of the Ada Haredes as far as Chodesh and Yashin is concerned. So we used to think in our innocence that the flour was coming from America, and whatever klalim there were in America were applicable here. But in fact, the flour comes from Russia. Okay. Now, and this is, again, not our topic, but we'll throw it in anyway. I got a free throw in here. Your wife is baking challah at home. And after you have a certain amount of kemach, you have to be mafrish challah. We call our Shabbos bread challah al shem, that you have to be mafrish challah. You have to separate the part which is supposed to go to the kohen. How much flour does it have to be in the dough in order to mafrish challah? This one says 2 kilos, this one says 20 kilos. It's no number of kilos whatsoever. It is a volume of 43.2 eggs. It has nothing to do with weight. If I take a kilo of flour, which I bought in Be'er Sheva, which has been sitting on the shelf in Be'er Sheva for a month, and I take it to B'nai Brak and I leave it there for a month, it will weigh more than a kilo because it absorbed the moisture, right? So some people said, hey, the new flour has more moisture than the old flour, so maybe these Ruskis are switching the flour, the new for the old, and slipping Chodesh on us. Right? So Rabbi Malenowitz is saying, come on, how far are you going to go? And I'm going to say, you don't have to go that far, because Chazal never said that you need chosamos for flour. It's a chashash rachok. You don't have to worry about it. Okay? We gave you a kula tonight. Okay. Now, some more stories. My daughter, Baruch Hashem, married...
What does that mean? It means a somach on the goyim?
No. They have hashgacha there. When they harvest it, they have hashgacha. Then they load it on the boat. They loaded on the boats, and these guys thought they took the boat to another port and switched the flour. And I said, come on, give me a break, right? Okay, 11 years ago, my daughter, she should live me well, got married. A fine yeshiva man, he's learning in Kirill Ad Hayom, Baruch Hashem, I give him the chickens, I give them money. I followed the advice of one of my good friends. He said, give money and shut up. So don't give them advice, I give them money. Okay. So she got married. I was in America when they made the arrangements for the wedding. Now, there's a cherem in Yerushalayim not to have more musicians than a drummer. If you heard these drummers, you could understand that my daughter wanted to have a full band. And even though it's only one drummer, they make it plenty loud also. So there's a place called Moshav Ora. And Moshav Ora is technically outside of the area of the cherem. And they have a catering there at Moshav Ora. So she went out with the chassan and with the chassan's uncle, who's an excellent, excellent negotiator. They got a tremendous price, the hall and the catering together, for $4,000, which was a great price. Had a great time, a June wedding. And they called me up for my approval. And what question did I ask? What's the hesher? I'd be talking for nothing if you didn't take that out. What's the hesher? And she said, Badas!
I said, fine, sign on the dotted line. Now, what does badatz mean? It means Beis Din Tzedek. Yechiel will tell you there's a Beis Din Tzedek of Belz. There's a Beis Din Tzedek of Yoredeya. There's a Beis Din Tzedek of Choshen Mishpat. And there's even, you know. So the words badatz, or the initials badatz, mean zero. But we Americans always thought badatz meant Eidah Charedus. So here I come back from America, and we're getting closer to the chasna. I want to kosher all the chickens for the chasna, right? Because I don't like to feed somebody something that I don't eat myself, and make sure we have the real glass. So we went out. I went out to the guy, to the place, the Ora, and I've heard that the ownership has changed since then. And my daughter was particularly concerned that I shouldn't name names. So we'll say that very possibly the place has changed ownership, and maybe the whole thing is different now. So we're talking 11 years ago, historical event, and I start reading over things in the guy's possession very carefully, and it says Badatz Mahadrin Yerushalayim. Well, the Eidah Charedus does not write Badatz Mahadrin Yerushalayim. So I asked, are you Eidah Charedus? He said, no, Rabbanut Mahadrin. Okay. So I said, we would like to have Badatz. And he said, well, for a buck a head, I'll give you badatz chickens, and for $3 a head, I'll give you only badatz ingredients.
Eidah
Charedus, right. For $1 a head, I'll give you Eidah Charedus chickens, and for $3 a head, only Eidah Charedus ingredients. So I call up my friend, who's much firmer than I am. He thinks I'm a shagun. And I said, what do we do? He said, you're paying for the cabs, right? And I said, of course. So he came out, and we talked to the mashgiach. Mashgiach, employee of the Rabbanut Yerushalayim Mahadrin Hashgacha system. And we asked what's doing. And he said the Arabs sleep in the kitchen. And we talked about the babysitter, we talked about the maid, we didn't talk about the Arabs sleeping in the kitchen. But if the 100% glatt kosher equipment and 100% glatt kosher ingredients, and the Arab cooks himself an egg on the frying pan, then the frying pan is treif. You may not use it. And if he's left there all night, you cannot be certain that he did not use it. You probably can bet that he did. And the Mashgiach told us other issues, and he said that he made a chasna there for his daughter. And knowing everything that he did, and being a professional Mashgiach, and being very familiar with the place, he said he would never do it again there, even if they did it entirely for free for him. So what we said is, my friend and I went into the owner, and we said, we want 3 Mashgiachim, and we want all the doors to the kitchen locked except one. And he said, you can have one Mashgiach, and all the doors will stay open. Even though I had to pay him for all of the food, we brought in outside catering and paid for the food a second time. That's what kashrus is about. It doesn't matter how poor I am, I can't feed my guests stuff that is not allowed. And we didn't. Sudas HaMasorah, right? You know that the Torah talks about grasshoppers and yum yum eat 'em up, and all kinds of deers and caribou and who knows what, giraffes, that you're allowed to eat. And if you want me to close up, we'll close up. If you want me to go on, I go on.
No one ever got Sudas HaMasorah.
Okay, so they're having the Sudas HaMasorah. Now, I personally would love to eat water buffalo. And I would love to eat deer. Grasshoppers, I told my wife she could eat, but I'm not so happy. So it's the Sudas HaMasorah. And
it could be they don't know what it is.
Okay, certain things, like birds, the Torah enumerates 24 kosher birds, 24 non-kosher birds. So if you can identify the 24 non-kosher birds, then all the other birds are kosher. But we can't. And since we can't, we have certain simonim, but they are simonim from Chazal, but they're not simonim mentioned in the Torah. One of them is called drosa, or dores. If the animal is a dores, which we might translate as a bird of prey, you may not eat it. But since it's not always clear whether a bird is a dores or not, we were makabel for many hundreds of years, exactly how many, depends where, what, when, we don't eat it without a masara.
without a tradition that this is a kosher bird. Which birds have a tradition? Chickens, ducks, geese, not turkeys. A turkey is a New World bird on which there is no tradition. When they started eating turkeys, they thought that Columbus had landed in India. And the Rabbanim wrote to the Rabbanim of India and said, do you have a Masaurus in that bird? And they said, of course. But they weren't talking about turkeys. Why we are able to eat turkeys, the best explanation that I had was from Rabbi J. David Bleich, who said that the eating of the turkey was accepted before the eating of a bird only with a Masaurus was accepted. Whether that's factually correct, I don't know, but it's the best explanation that I heard. We don't eat turkeys. We sometimes invite turkeys to the table, but anyway, so what about mallard ducks, Muscovy ducks? Now, that's all with regard to birds. In regard to grasshoppers, of course you need a Masaurus. Would you know if it's a kosher grasshopper by looking at it? You would not. But Yemenites, many of them would know. Moroccans used to eat grasshoppers. You could look it up on the internet and look at the kosher species of grasshoppers. But most Ashkenazim don't even want to eat a grasshopper, but I'm told that they're very yummy. All right. What about animals? So the Shach, Sifrei Kohen, one of the very, very important Mefarshim on the Shulchan Aruch, says that you can only eat behemoths, or chayas maybe, with a Masorah also, with a tradition that this is a kosher animal. Why this is so is very difficult for me to understand, but I'm not the Shach. The explanation that I got from Rabbi Bleich was that they were choshish for genetic mutation. Could be. But in any case, so there's this group that is trying to establish that in fact we do have a Masorah on various things and we can eat it. Giraffe, for instance, Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon says that the giraffe is the zemer, which is a chayat tahor mentioned in the Torah. Very expensive, tough meat, but in a pinch. And if anyone ever tells you they don't know where to shecht the giraffe, they are either pulling your leg or idiots. But either one, because there's a big giant place on the giraffe that you can shecht. And you know why the giraffe developed the long neck. This is part of the evolutionary process so that they could eat the food on the higher branches, because there was no food on the higher, on the lower branches, right? That's organic evolution, Darwin and so on. And that is why there are no giraffes today, because the little baby giraffes and the lady giraffes, which were shorter, couldn't reach the high branches, so they'd all starve to death, and therefore there are no giraffes today. Okay, that's as far as evolution is concerned. So anyway, so they wanted to make a seuda to mechazik, the tradition on these various birds and the animals and so on and so forth. And they were going to shecht a jamus, a water buffalo. So what do you think Tzvi Rogan, or Harav Agon, or Tzvi Rogan the Randabam, would do if there was going to be a jamus served the following night? I tried to get into the car to go watch the shechit of the jamus and to check the night, but there was supposedly no room in the car, and I didn't get to go. But at least I wanted to hear all the lectures in the shiurim at the Suzas HaMasoris, because they had world-renowned people, Rav Schlesinger Schlichter, and so on and so forth, to talk about all these wonderful things, and I wanted at least to hear it. But I will not sit in a place where someone will suspect that I am eating something that you're not allowed to eat, because they will say, oh, Rabbi Rogan is here, well, you could eat it. Right? I won't do that. So I went to the restaurant in advance, before the Suda the Mephosaurus, to check out the restaurant. So I see the organizer, and he says, oh, good, you're here. I have to run out. You be the Mashgiach for a while. Does he know if I'm a trained Mashgiach? He does not. I said, at 4 o'clock, I am leaving whether you are back or not. I must leave. I was there with a friend. He said, fine. All right. So we are watching. The owner says, Mefurash, he's a Machal Shabbos Bafarhas. He has public Sabbath desecrator, meaning he has no Ne'amonis Prakashas whatsoever. Well, halfway through our time there, we discovered that there was a back door to the kitchen, and stuff could go in and out all the time. Meaning, in Yiddish we say, gornish vert, is worth nothing. Our standing there outside, or walking in and out of the kitchen, doesn't help if we didn't know there was a back door that they could have been bringing stuff in. Even if it's just a simple question of meistering, trumos and matzros. So, you have to be on the ball all the time. Posen Shlita, should live very well. The Dayan of Broyers used to be in charge of the Shlita and all the kashas for Broyers. When he was in charge, they had secret simonim on all the pieces of meat. They knew exactly how many cows came out glatt kosher from their Shechita. The Shochtim were paid by the Kehillah. Every day a Mashgiach went to every single butcher store, checked every piece of meat for the secret Simonim, counted the pieces of meat to make sure it was all correct. Unfortunately, the modern generation doesn't speak so much Yiddish. We will only tell you that a cow in Yiddish is a key. All right? So one day they shechted, the Rav comes into the butcher store. How is it that you sold 400 kosher tongues? We only shechted 100 kosher animals yesterday. And he said, Ki mishamish ba'arba l'shamos. So if you learn enough Rashi and so on, and you speak a little Yiddish, the word ki, kaf yud, can mean four different things. But ki mishamish ba'arba l'shamos in Yiddish means the cow uses four tongues. Okay. Wasn't so funny. You don't have to laugh. Made me feel bad. Okay. Whoever wants to go, I will turn the other way. When I had a shul, I only gave the drasha after Anam Zmiros. And I announced, whoever needs to go, wants to go, go. And I only gave a drasha twice a year anyway, Shabbat Shuvah and Shabbat Shuvah.
I didn't break out.
Well, eventually we got kicked out of our place, but, I wasn't getting paid for that either. I paid the Baal Tria myself. I could be a prophet. I know where to get the prophet. Okay, so I'll tell you about one butcher who was under the system of the secret Simon. And under the terms of his hesher, he could take either broyer's poultry, it could take broyer's meat, or it could take satmar meat. And he told me he never took satmar meat into the store because some people don't use it, and for them it's like a nether, and he wouldn't want to machshel them. And I was trying to learn how to do trebering, which is removing certain blood vessels that we have to remove before we soak and salt the meat. And one day there was a big giant piece of meat hanging there, and it had plumbers from satmar. The guy said he doesn't have any satmar meat in the store, so I asked the guys who are cutting up the meat, what's this? This is the bull meat. What do you use it for? The salami. So when the balabos came in, I said, so all the salamis are with the satmar meat? He said, no, we don't have any satmar meat in the store. I said, what about the bull meat? He said, oh, Breuer doesn't chef bulls. I said, I didn't say bull. The same butcher, on another occasion, had Empire turkeys, and I'm not saying turkey's kosher, and I'm not saying Empire is either kosher or trade, but his hesher did not allow him to use Empire anything. And he was carefully cutting off the plastic bags that were printed with Empire and cutting off the metal plumbers that said Empire and putting them in the display tray and selling them to people who thought that they were buying Breuer's turkeys. So that's called faking, cheating. Even if it is kosher, he's stealing because the Breuer is more expensive than the Empire. Bagels. Bagels is bread. I was teaching in Dayton, Ohio, which is a midbar of Yiddishkeit, 7,500 Jews in town. Three ladies covered their hair. 10 ladies used the mikveh. A midbar. There was no kosher butcher in town. The kosher bakery was run by an Italian goy. And somebody opened up a bagel store, and the Talmidim said, Rabbi Rogan, can we eat the bagels? And I said, I'll check it out. Now, one of the girls in the class, her father was giving the hefsher on the bagels. Okay. So I went over to the bagel store. And bagels are very simple. We make them at home for Shavuos. Flour, water, salt, yeast, showing you have everything you need for a bagel. For a longer shelf life, they put in oil. Salt looks pretty good. Flour looks pretty good. The water wasn't bad. This is not in New York, so we didn't have bugs. But in America, the water is great. But he had this oil. What's the oil for? A certain kind of a bagel. Had a big K on the label. Where do you get the oil? We get it from a wholesaler Plony who buys it from factory Plony, and it's under Hashgacha of Rav Plony. The only one that I remember is the Miami Margarine Company in Cincinnati, Ohio. So, all right, the Plony Rav who gave the hefsher was somebody that we knew about, and it was a good hefsher. So what did I do? I called the wholesaler. Yes, we sell them the oil. We get it from Miami Margarine, and it's under the hefsher of Rav Plony. Then what did I do? I called up Miami Margarine Company. Yes, we sell them the oil, and we make the oil, and it's under the hefsher of Rav Plony. Very good. So I called up Rav Plony. And Rav Plony said, baloney.
Lo hayu hadvarim me'olam. But I'll check it out for you. So, the actual oil was not made in Ohio. It was made in Minnesota under the hechsher of the widow, Rebbetzin, of a Rav, whose hechsher was not accepted by the people in his own town. And I reported back to my class not to eat the bagels. And the girl whose father gave the hechsher was extremely upset. And I said, I can only say what I think. And I can't, I mean, I feel bad for you, but I can't change it. That's the way it is. And that's the way it was. And this bakery, I was, when I got to town, if you can imagine, I was the Godel HaDor of Dayton, Ohio. And, I mean, the Rav was a fine man. Got up at 5 o'clock every morning to make sure he learned before he went to become the minion and then the principal of the school. But as far as halacha was concerned, I was the guy. So he asked me to check into the bakery because they had stopped using the local bakery and were schlepping in bread for the school from Cincinnati, an hour away. It was a big problem. And we got together a meeting, made a vat ha'ir, and we had a whole system. A volunteer mashgichim would sign a notebook when they came in, and so on and so forth. And of course, at the beginning, we went through, you have to kosher this, you have to throw out that. 6 months later, a bag full of wormholes, the same bag that had been there before that I told him to throw out, was still in the store. Maybe he wasn't using it, maybe he was. This Italian guy, you can't be samachan, because he wasn't following what we told him. Always check, always check, always check. One more story? One more story. I went to a chasna many, many years ago, probably changed, hopefully changed. I lived in Washington Heights. The chasna was in Crown Heights. It was on a Motzei Shabbos in the catering hall, which was the catering hall for a certain so-called Hasidic group. And we, being Yekid, coming from Washington Heights, even though we had to schlep down there an hour, we were among the first people there. And the caterers were already cooking, even though there were no Jews supervising the kitchen yet. We did not eat at that chasna, nor should you. One thing I must tell you. That's about the salmon. Must tell you about the salmon. There are people who will tell you that salmon is a particularly pink color, and there's no substitute for it, and therefore, and you will not find, I mean, the most from Mashgiach, the second most from the Mashgiach that I know, gives a hechsher on a certain lox company in Los Angeles, and he does not check every fish.
I think we shouldn't use the mic now that I'm going to answer.
So just
for now, no mic, please.
And he told me that he does not check every fish. Now, if we didn't lose it by dropping all these papers, we have an article from the Jerusalem Post. Deadly puffer fish sold as salmon kills 15. I don't know what a puffer fish looks like. 15 people bought it thinking it was salmon and ate it and died. And so just because it looks like that doesn't mean it's that. You have to see the things. Not you have to see the scales is what you have to see. You must see the scales. If it has scales of the right kind, then the Chazal tells it also has sin. I was once at a place called Trader Joe's. And I looked at the freezer section, so I always like to see what's going on there, and I saw this beautiful looking fish, and I said, oh, salmon. And I picked up the package. The label did not say salmon, it was something else that I, as somebody who eats salmon on a regular basis, thought by its appearance was salmon. So that's really critical.
Would you eat a hind quarter that you travered?
I unfortunately did not learn travering of the hind quarter. If you're asking theoretically, if I knew it was
travered, what do you hold?
Okay. So many of you may know that Ashkenazim lately do not eat hindquarter. The reason is, in the hindquarter, there's chaylev, which is forbidden by the Torah, and somebody who eats the kazayit of it is chayev kares, the ultimate penalty, and there's the gid hanasher, the sciatic nerve, which one is not allowed to eat. And both of them are difficult to remove. And at a time when you've got lots of going to buy hindquarters and traces and so on, they said, why should we get involved with this whole issue? And therefore, for some hundreds of years, again, exactly how many hundreds, I'm not sure, in the time of the Ramah, I believe that Ashkenazim still ate hindquarter freely. But sometime they stopped using it.
in the 1939, Yamach Shemo Vezichro entered Poland with his troops, and the Nazis took over. Before they started killing the Jews on a massive scale, they just made life hard for them. And they said, we do not want fine Aryan people to have to eat meat which is shechted by you cruel, barbaric, horrible Jews. And therefore, you may only shecht the number of animals which is commensurate with the number of Jews. Now, in Warsaw, before Hitler came along, every cow and every lamb was shechted by a Jewish shochet. And the treifos and the nevelos and whatever the Jews didn't need were sold to the goyim. But every animal in Warsaw was shechted. And Hitler said, nothing doing. And the Jews said, but we don't eat the hindquarters, so we really need twice as many animals. And Hitler said, I don't care what you want, this is what you get. The Rabbanim got together, Chashuve Hakov, a great Rabbanim. Rabbanim that even if you stand up for them, you should stand up again. I mean, my Rebbe of Davidich, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, knew Talmud Bavli and Talmud Yerushalmi word for word from the beginning to the end. He was a roommate with Rav Shimon Schwab, Zichronim Livracha. The word is that at night, maybe 10 o'clock at night, I don't know exactly what hour, when the Bachurim went to sleep, they went back to the Beis Medrash to learn Rishonim by heart. And he also knew quite a few Achronim by heart. And he was a Rav in a city called Suvalk. Because he was embarrassed, maybe, that he was in YU when he was introduced to the Chasm, he was called the Suvalk Rav as opposed to a Rosh Yeshiva at YU. And when I was learning Chulin, I was also to learn Chulin with the Rav Davidishin. And I said, Rebbe, in Suvalk, did they eat hindquarters? And he was surprised that I had heard about the whole thing. And he said, yes, they did. They sent a shliach to go to whoever knew how to learn how to trade with the hindquarters and to eat it. So if I were absolutely sure that it was traded properly, I have no problem eating it.
You don't know of any basis to say that there's a minig not to eat it regardless.
The fact that they ate it in World War II. That's a fact. An irrefutable fact. There's a question whether you can have a minhag to paskin that something is osir. Moshe Feinstein says you cannot. There's no such thing as a minhag le'asor, according to Moshe Feinstein. So, and besides the Vilna Gaon, when he was coming to Eretz Yisrael, I mean, he didn't quite make it, right? But he was going to come to Eretz Yisrael. And he said, I can hardly wait till I get to Eretz Yisrael and get rid of all this minig poilish. Because he held that once he comes to Eretz Yisrael, he can paskin according to the din, without worrying about all of these issues. So here we're in Eretz Yisrael, going to the Gaon, there's certainly no problem. Now he did supposedly have a problem with the machlokas, the mabit, and the Beis Yosef, peros, stuff grown by Goyim during Shemitah, the Beis Yosef says does not have Kedushin Shmias, and the Mabit says it does. Ben Ebrak is noig like the Mabit, Yerushalayim is noig Lakula like the Beis Yosef. And the Gaon, they say, held like the Mabit, but he was choshish that the Beis Yosef was the Rav of Eretz Yisrael, and they would be forced to go along with the Kula of the Beis Yosef. So you can't say, oh well, I'll just follow them for the Chumash. No. He held that if he's the Poisik, then he's the Poisik. And you can't start up with it. So, I can't document it, but that's what they say. So, I have seen several people trabering, basically fine Jews, and after watching it, I said, I don't have to eat that hindquarter so much. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it whatsoever, but if I would really have the real thing and I would know, I have no problem. Any other questions? They ask what are we going to eat tonight?
Whose matzah do you eat?
Matzah?
Pesach.
I pay over $300, maybe $400 a kilo for matzah.
Very slowly.
And, in other words,
you can't eat it too slowly, or you're not going to eat kazayas with that kilo press.
Kazayas are very small. It's much cheaper to give you steak than to give you matzah in my house, but I don't have the guests bring their own matzahs. I have a chabura I pay somebody who's a professional chabura leader. I pay him, I think I pay him $100 an hour to oversee my chabura because it takes place while I'm in America. The biggest problem with matzah is that it's not baked. From time to time, people enter my life.
Stop.
Don't blink.
You're still using those greasy old tapes? Kind of fresh, you know, new format.
And not baked, you were saying.
Yeah, occasionally somebody comes into my life and forces me to open my eyes to something new. And 35 years ago, somebody said to me, you know, it says in Shulchan Aruch that after they knead the dough, and the Rosh says that it's usher to bake the matzah, and to knead the matzah in the same room that the mouth of the oven is, because the room gets heated up and it becomes chametz immediately. You don't have your 18 minutes. But the Shulchan Aruch says that after you kneaded the dough with your hands, if you knead it all day long, it doesn't become chametz. But after you knead it with your hands, it becomes heated by your body temperature, and then the moment you remove your hands, machmitz miyad is the lashon of the Shulchan Aruch. Well, machmitz miyad, what does that mean? So this friend, 35 years ago, said that he had spoken to Rav Eliyashiv. This is when Shleita, when Rav Eliyashiv was a young man. I mean, he was still a great rav, but he was much younger than he is today, because this guy told me it 35 years ago, and he had heard it several, he spoke to Rav Eliyashiv several years before. That's when you could still speak to Rav Eliyashiv. You have to go through five layers of guards. And he asked, you know, Vasepis, what's with this Shulchan Aruch? And he said, well, miyad can't mean miyad like that. He said, does it mean a minute? Does it mean a half a minute? I don't know, but it's kedai to spend a lot of money to get matzahs that didn't even sit for a half a minute. So we did that from 1975 until I got to Eretz Yisrael. And then another guy came into my life and he said, you know, the matzah isn't baked properly. Now there's a book written by Rav Mordechai Tendler, without getting into his issues, but he was the grandson of Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zeichel Levrocha, the son of Rav Moshe Tendler, Shlita, and he said, b'shem his grandfather, Rav Moshe, that the problem is that the matzah's ovens are too hot. Now, I don't know how many of you bake, but I personally have been baking for 54 years. And if the temperature is too hot, then the outside gets done and the inside is dull. And they want production. So if the outside look is done, and it goes on. And I stood with this guy, and we went from place to place, fixed Sephardic matzahs, thin Ashkenazi matzahs, and as soon as they came out of the oven, we started pulling them apart. If you can pull it apart and you see threads of dough, then it's called chametz. Right? So they wait. If you wait a few minutes, it dries out. But it doesn't change the fact that it wasn't finished baking. So what we do, our matzahs, I won't say they're as thin as this piece of cardboard, but they're definitely not thicker than the three pieces of cardboard together. And we break from almost every matzah from the outside. We break off until we get to the part that's firm. Right away after the oven, we have three people standing as the matzahs come out of the oven. We burn our fingers, but we get a few matzahs that cost $300 a kilo.
Shalim?
I'm very makel on shalim. Very makel on shalim. Shalom, I try to be mach. Shalom, we're makel.
You said April is the Shina
matzahs. I'm not the expert on matzahs. I have made the statement before, and I will make the statement again. Every hand matzah is suffik chametz, suffik matzah, and every machine matzah is a tarovas chametz. Every hand matzah is either chametz or it's matzah, and every machine matzah has some chametz mixed in. I have been in fine machine matzah chaburas, where first the factory cleaned it out, then the bachram cleaned it out, and there was still some amount of chametz. We will not say it's large. Maybe it was 1 in 1,000. But some amount of chametz was there. And even when I was doing something myself, I was in a matzah chabura where the guy said, we need somebody really ritzini to clean out the mixing head. And that was my job. And I tell you, there was still chametz left on the one that I cleaned. So if you're willing to accept that there's a tarovas chametz, and if it's mixed in before Pesach, it's batel b'shishin, fine, then maybe it's okay. I mean, my friend who's the matzah expert will give you a whole list of issues. And one of them is that sometimes there are problems. You might have matzahs that are doubled. You might have matzahs that are not thoroughly baked. And I have seen it with my own eyes. And at the chabur where I was last, I was in charge of pushing out the bad matzahs. And what they're inside of the oven, there's a belt. The matzahs go through on a belt. Then it transfers to a second belt, and then to a third belt, and maybe to a fourth belt. And I was by the fourth belt, and it was still so hot that you burned your hand when you touched it, so it could still transfer or receive problems, transfer problems to the equipment or receive problems from the equipment. And one time, the matzahs come out, and they were flaming, mamish flames coming out of the matzahs, and the people from the other side ran, because they were trying to push those off of the belt as fast as they could. But they definitely, inside, you could see it was dough. Now, what they'll tell you is inside the oven, when it goes back, it's heated up and is koshered at the same temperature that it's baked at. Well, the guy who owns that bakery, who is like a tenth cousin of mine, said, it ain't so. It's not kosher on the way back. So, as I say, there are a whole list of problems. I personally would rather spend the $300, $400 a kilo. Not everyone is in that position, so the alternative is to come and beg a kezias of matzah, which is actually very small, size in the olive. That's why we call it a kezias. From somebody who has good matzahs, and not eat the others. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Yes.
This is the last question that we're going to officially close.
If there was a very small amount of chametz in it, before Pesach, I could still bustle for the cheese.
Yes.
It should be okay.
That's what he said.
I said it's bustle. It says okay. But there are many people, for instance, a vort from Rav Moshe Big Zeich Lebracha. He was the biggest gadol that you could actually call up on the phone, and he answered it himself. And he, in a Shabbos Hagadol Drasha, said, Alavai, the Pesach Dika Matzahs should be as good as the Chametz Dika Sugar. So the Chassidish circles in America, I mean, Domino Sugar had the OK Labs, or the Levi Hechsher, but there was something called Indian Chief, which was special Chassidic Hechsher when they put the extra bag on top of the Domino Sugar. And so people would spend extra money to get the Indian Chief special Hasidic sugar. And he said, Alavai, the Chometz Dika sugar, without any extra, Alavai, the Pesach Dika Matzah should be as good as the Chometz Dika sugar.
I would like to thank the Rabbi on behalf of the community. I hope everyone stopped within all the stories and the wonderful delivery, the Matthias, the reality of how we really have to start getting a lot more serious. These aren't Chometz, the Rabbi spoke about Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, of course. I'm always saying my name. This is Shulchan Aruch, not a chumrah. We're delivering on everything else. While we pack up the equipment and get ready to go, as long as the rabbi's willing to go, get the questions in. And next week, we get the chair.